Hello, I'm Jim Henry. This is number 0412, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0412. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Larry Peterson, founder and director of the Light Book Company. He was one of the winners of last year's Astrellis Oncology C3 Prize for developing a light therapy device that improves the quality of life for cancer patients.
LightBook was originally conceived as a light therapy device to treat seasonal affective disorder and the winter blues. Several years ago, a researcher from San Diego, who was a cancer researcher, contacted me and asked if she might be able to get some LightBooks to use on some of her cancer patients. These chemo patients were experiencing really profound sleep issues and fatigue issues, and she knew because LightBook could help for things like jet lag, that it might also help these patients going through chemo. So she did a small study, and lo and behold, it worked like a charm.
Chris Bird, author of Surviving a Mass Killer Rampage.
If you're walking down a street, always try and face the traffic so you have a little bit more warning if somebody is driving a vehicle onto the sidewalk. Another thing is if you're walking down the street, if you happen to see that there is parking on one side but not on the other, and a string of cars parked will prevent another vehicle from getting onto the sidewalk. So you're safer on the sidewalk that has cars parked alongside it.
Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman. Book Banter reviews, nevertheless, the memoir of Donald Trump's TV alter ego, Alec Baldwin. So get ready for some bold Baldwin tales coming up soon on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0412 was Jim Henry, who is owner of a Part 15 radio station, HBR Radio 1610, in Honeybrook Township in Pennsylvania, which is also a new home for the Stuff File program. Thank you very much, Jim, for doing the guest slate, and more importantly, thank you very much for adding the Stuff File program to your roster of shows. Very much appreciated. This is a program, by the way, that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. So, join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? British police have launched a public appeal to find the owner of a human finger 7 years after it was found in London. Police said on Thursday that the DNA on the severed finger, which came from a male, did not match any missing person or crime reports of the time, and they have no other clues. It was found by a dog in the rear courtyard of a London shop in 2010. We have now exhausted all lines of inquiry and have been unable to find out who the finger belongs to and how the finger became detached in the first place. It is quite the mystery, said Detective Constable Tom Boone. We are now appealing for the public to help us solve the case. You know, I'm going out on a limb, if not at least a digit, to say that if someone lost a finger 7 years ago and never reported it, they probably don't want it back. Now that the police are asking the public about it, that's only going to bring up unwanted attention. Hey, John, did you hear that police are asking people if they're missing a finger? And by the way, how come even in the summertime you're always wearing mittens? Yeah. Anyway, while investigating another incident, Jefferson County, Alabama sheriff's deputies were informed of a stolen flatbed truck. The deputies spotted the truck and gave chase. The truck went onto the interstate and the deputies continued the chase at 25 to 30 miles per hour. Why so slow? Well, according to Chief Deputy Randy Christian, the thief couldn't get the truck out of first gear. Before too long, the truck's transmission seized and 29-year-old Randy Vert was removed from the truck and arrested. He's charged with first-degree theft of property, reckless endangerment, attempting to elude, and resisting arrest. Thank God he couldn't find second gear, Christian said. The pursuit could have gone all the way up to 35 miles per hour. I like a cop with a sense of humor. Yeah. Yeah, at 35 miles per hour, the bicycle officers wouldn't have been able to keep up. You know, I've said this time and time again, if you're going to commit a crime, you really need to consider the follow-through of your actions. If you can't drive a stick, leave vehicle theft to someone else. Seriously. Anyway. A man was shot in Eureka, California, and the gunman escaped on a bicycle. The victim wasn't terribly injured, though. The gun used was a flare gun, which shoots a shotgun shell, and that shell was loaded with, wait for it, Rice Krispies cereal. Yeah, detectives quickly caught up with 29-year-old Timothy Glass Jr. and arrested him. The victim was taken to hospital by ambulance. I'm guessing the treatment for such a wound would be milk. Well, that was certainly the pop that followed the snap and the crackle, I guess. A man in Oregon was arrested after he was seen touching a chicken in a sexual manner for his own pleasure. Jackson County Police said that they have arrested 27-year-old Joshua Brian Waltman after being accused of touching the chicken's sexual organs. Okay, let's stop right there. I'm an inner city kid. Now, to me, you find chickens in a bucket, so I wouldn't even know where to find a chicken's sexual organs. Anyway, let's continue, and while we're at it, let's get some appropriate music here. Okie dokie. Waltman has been charged with sexual assault of an animal, public indecency, menacing, and disorderly conduct. He was also charged with probation violation for meth possession. Waltman has now pleaded guilty to felony-level sexual assault of an animal. The judge sentenced Waltman to 20 days in the Jackson County Jail. He will receive credit for the time he has served since his arrest. Waltman was also placed on 2 years probation, and he was also ordered to register as a sex offender. So, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. He has to register as a sex offender. So, if I understand this correctly, he can't live near a school, but he can live near a poultry farm. Alrighty then. Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, after a rash of burglaries of businesses in Boynton Beach, Florida, police got a break. Security video not only clearly showed the burglar, but also a tattoo on his forearm that read Poe, P-O-E. When detectives noticed a man matching the burglar's description at a gas station, they stopped to talk to him. He denied any knowledge of the burglaries, but they couldn't help but notice the tattoo on his forearm. They arrested the 30-year-old on multiple counts of burglary. His name? Ryan Austin Poe. And he shall thieve nevermore. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? According to statistics released from the Canadian Cancer Society, nearly 1 in 2 Canadians are expected to get cancer. This means in addition to innovative treatments, patients will need support. Now, last year at this time, we talked about the Astellas Oncology C3 Prize, which was designed to inspire and enable the next generation of non-medicine innovation with $100,000 in grants to bring bright ideas to life. That contest is taking place again this year with another global search for entries, which will be accepted online at c3prize.com through August 21st. 5 finalists will then be invited to pitch their ideas in front of a live panel of judges in Mexico City. Now, last year, the contest received more than 100 entries from 15 countries, with 2 of the top 5 finalists from Canada. One of those finalists was Larry Peterson, who won first prize and took home $25,000. He's founder and director of the Light Book Company. And Larry joins us on the line right now from Washington State. Hi, Larry.
Yeah, good morning. How are you, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this. You won the prize for developing a light therapy device to reduce fatigue and potentially increase the life of cancer patients undergoing treatment. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And I should say the quality of life. How did you come up with this idea?
Well, LightBook was originally conceived as a light therapy device to treat seasonal affective disorder and the winter blues, which if you live in Canada, you recognize as something that happens to a lot of folks from, say, the fall, October time through the spring. And it was in the market and being sold for that purpose, not only in Canada, but around the world. And several years ago, a researcher from San Diego, who was a cancer researcher, who I happen to know, contacted me and asked if she might be able to get some light books to use on some of her cancer patients who were going through chemotherapy. And she had noticed that these chemo patients were experiencing really profound sleep issues and fatigue issues that were unrelenting. And she knew because LightBook could help for things like jet lag in addition to SAD, that it might also help these patients going through chemo. So she did a small study, and lo and behold, it worked like a charm.
Wow. Now, before it was connected to something that could help people with cancer, this was kind of a situation where I'm assuming that necessity was the mother of invention. This was something you were working on because it was something that was important to you personally.
Absolutely. And I had grown up in Canada and Alberta and had moved to California to go to school and lived in Los Angeles for 15 years. Had no issues in the winter around in Southern California, but when I moved back up to Canada in 1994, ironically, to help care for my father who had terminal cancer at the time, I found that by the time summer turned to fall, that I was almost to the point of being suicidal. I could not get off my parents' couch. I couldn't function normally. I was really at my wit's end, and I was introduced to light therapy by a doctor in my hometown, a psychiatrist, and she had convinced the hospital there to buy six of these big fluorescent light boxes to loan out to her patients. And I was a complete skeptic, but I was also really desperate and didn't want to take any antidepressants because I didn't really think of myself as being classically depressed. And so I, out of desperation and necessity, as you say, tried this light box, I should say, and it was this big heavy box that weighed about 10 pounds and took up half my parents' dining table. But in about 30 minutes or an hour sitting in front of it, I felt like I was back in Southern California. The problem was that it was too big and too cumbersome. I couldn't travel with it. I couldn't take it to my office. I couldn't move around with it. So after about 5 years, I decided that there had to be a better, smaller one out there. And if I couldn't find one online, which I couldn't, I would just do it myself.
Wow. Okay, so now flash forward to last year. You've got this company, LightBook Company, and you are entering into this contest. First of all, how did you get involved or how did you find out about the Astellas Oncology C3 prize?
Well, it was just a fluke, actually. I had a news feed on my phone. I saw an article that Robert Herkovic, a fellow Canadian, a Shark Tank ex-Dragon guy, had been just added to the judges for the C3 prize. And I follow Robert Herkovic online, and I always admired his professionalism and business acumen and his personal, just his personal nature. So I read the article, and I saw this prize, and I thought, well, huh, by this point, we, as of last year, had 3 published studies on how LightBook can help with cancer fatigue. But I still thought it was a long shot, but I thought, you know what, for the time it will take to do this short video and enter, and it was only about a week or two before the deadline, I decided on a whim just to go ahead and submit my entry.
So you said it was a long shot, but you were accepted. So what was going through your mind? What was that feeling when you realized you were at least a finalist?
Oh, it was very surprising, very exciting, and gratifying, frankly. And just to be included in that group of 5, the finalists, we really, I was very gratified to be part of that. And once we met and the 5 of us really bonded, it was an interesting experience. All entrepreneurs, we all shared the same desire and same goals for ours to succeed, but we also were really supportive of each other's entries as well.
So going forward, you've won. What does it mean besides the prize you got? Going forward, does it bring more attention to what your product can do for those who are suffering from cancer? Does it spurn you on to doing other things, perhaps even with some of the other entries that you met that would be helpful to cancer patients? How has it changed things for you?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing is it really raised the awareness and, you know, cancer fatigue and cancer care in general. And Astellas, I have to really compliment them on approaching this, because it isn't, we've gotten really good about treating cancer and diagnosing cancer, but the actual cancer care part of it is really lagged far behind. And this prize has really helped to raise the awareness and shine the spotlight on this issue, number one. And secondly, for Lightbook, it really helped to raise the awareness of light therapy as a treatment for cancer fatigue, because up until Lightbook came along and was shown in these clinical studies to be effective, nothing had worked for cancer fatigue. And it can go on for 3 to 5 years after you finish your treatment. So it was really something that was really lagging far behind in terms of awareness. And winning the prize, or being one of the winners of the prize, has really helped to generate the awareness, not just in the research community, but in the medical community and, frankly, in the general population as well.
Who'd have thought when you first started thinking about this, and again, as we said, necessity is the mother of invention, you were looking for something to help you with your SAD, and who'd have thought when you first started doing this that you'd be where you are today?
I know, and it circles back, you know, it's ironic that I moved back to Canada to help my father when he was going through cancer, and of course this was long before Lightbook came along, and if I'd had Lightbook then, it would have helped him, but it was because I came back to help him with his cancer experience that Lightbook was created at all. So it is a nice irony at the end of the day.
Well, congratulations, and thanks for talking with us. One last question. Do you hear, now that you've won this, do you hear from other people who are aspiring to enter this contest as well? Have you become sort of a mentor to some people?
I wouldn't say I've become a mentor, but I definitely spread the word at every opportunity, and for, you know, I appreciate you doing this interview and podcast for that purpose, because, you know, anybody who's out there listening to this, even if you have an idea, you don't need to have a business, you don't need to have a business plan. Astellas just wants to hear your idea, and if it's a bright idea, no pun intended, like Lightbook, it doesn't have to be as far along. Who knows how many people it can help.
Again, thank you very much, Larry, for being on the program. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Same here, Peter. Take care. Cheers.
Larry Peterson, founder and director of the Lightbook Company. You can find out more information about his company by going to lightbook.com, and light is spelled LiteBook.com, lightbook.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0412, and you'll find links to Larry's site, plus links to the Astellas Oncology C3 Prize to find out more info about this year's challenge. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about surviving a mass killer rampage. Plus, Stuart Nolman joins us once again with another edition of Book Banter. And of course, we do indeed have an Idiot of the Day coming your way. And lots more Stuff File news here on a program that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, a prostitute was arrested in Trinity, Florida after making a house call. Pasco County Sheriff's investigators say 25-year-old Trisha Bea advertised online and was hired at 1:30 a.m. by an unnamed male in a gated community who buzzed her in. And he cautioned her, they had to be quiet because his parents were asleep upstairs. When his parents found out, the boy is only 15, they called police. Bea says the boy claimed to be 19, but she was arrested and charged with lewd and lascivious battery on a victim between 12 and 15. The boy even stiffed her, Bea said. He agreed to pay $150, but when she arrived, he only said he had 80. She went through with her side of the deal anyway. You know, the problem is, his parents are afraid to spank him since he would probably offer to pay for that too. But seriously, does anybody ever get carded by a prostitute? Yeah. Okay, having spent years in television often doing live reporting, this is one of my nightmares that thankfully never came true. A California TV reporter is gaining national fame from an unfortunate incident, being sprayed with vomit by a drunken reveler. Wendy Birch of KTLA-TV was delivering a live report from an Ironman competition in Hermosa Beach, California, when she went to interview some of the participants during a portion of the event that called for the competitors to chug beer after a physical challenge. Birch made note of one drunken competitor vomiting nearby and moved to give her room and question a man who appeared to be holding his alcohol a bit better. The video shows Birch and the man both end up struck by projectile vomit, from another competitor standing off camera. Birch said the man she was interviewing was asking for it, quite literally. As she wrote in the Huffington Post, "What I didn't notice until later is that he had a bullseye drawn on his back with the word puke here written in magic marker." She said the video's freeze frame right at the moment of vomiting was a coincidental technical glitch. Birch continued to report from the event after wiping the vomit from her skin and clothes. The reporter said she was surprised to see the video quickly go viral, spreading with multiple YouTube uploads gaining thousands of views each. "To all of you aspiring journalists out there, I'm here to tell you dreams really do come true, especially in the age of viral videos," Birch wrote. Yeah, that's not my dream. Not even close. Well, Texas passed the pork chopper bill in 2011, allowing aerial hunting of feral hogs, and in May, legislators approved hunting from hot air balloons, which are quieter and give hunters a steadier shot. Wow, how this hasn't become a live sporting event on ESPN, I'll never know. Enterprising mother Janine Isom in Cedar Hills, Utah, took her 7-year-old son's dental care into her own hands in June when she purchased hand sanitizer and needle nose pliers at Walmart, then ushered her son into the store's restroom and pulled out 2 of his teeth. Police were alerted by the boy's older brother when he heard the screaming. The mother was charged with felony child abuse. You know, some people really do take DIY to a whole new extreme, don't they? And as I've often said on this program, everything seems to happen at Walmart. And speaking of Walmart, college student Lydia Marie Cormani almost made it out of a Gillette, Wyoming Walmart with more than $2,000 worth of merchandise without paying for it. When police arrived, she was ready with a reason. She was doing research about kleptomania, which also explained the stockpile of stolen items in her dorm room. However, as she was enrolled in only a biology class at Gillette College, it was unclear what she planned to do with the results of her study. Well, perhaps she should change her major to creative writing for a starter. Yeah. And finally, in the section of Stuff File News, we have one more story to get to before we get to our next guest on the program. Maintenance workers at the courthouse in Jonesboro, Arkansas, are fed up with people urinating in the elevators, especially considering that restrooms are within spitting distance of the elevators. And now I'm sure there will be a spitting problem since I've put that idea in people's heads. Craighead County officials hope to stem the tide with newly installed security cameras, which have caught 3 men in the act since their installation last fall. Well, thankfully so far it's only men. Seriously, who in their right mind thinks it's a good idea to pee in an elevator, or for that matter, any place indoors that isn't designed for that purpose? Really? Actually, I got to share a personal story here for a moment. When I was working at Radio Canada International many, many years ago, I was lucky enough to have a corner office on the fourth floor with windows on two sides, and it was a nice panoramic view. And I used to get into work at around 6 o'clock in the morning, and outside of my window on one of the sides, there was across the street a huge sculpture that was on the lawn adjacent or across the street from my office window. And I looked out one morning just as the sun was rising and saw a really heavy set person urinating on this sculpture, or at least on the base of the sculpture. And I said to my assistant who was in my office but couldn't see from the window where she was sitting, I said, there's a rather large person peeing outside on the sculpture. And she just blasé said in a matter-of-fact kind of way, oh, there's always something like that going on in this neighborhood. You'll get used to it. Guys do that all the time. And I said, well, I don't know if I'm going to get used to it. And second, it's not a guy. Yeah, that happened many, many years ago. And I still have that image burned in my head, by the way. Can't get rid of that one. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? In one of the recent terror attacks in London, a rented van was driven into a crowd leaving a mosque during Ramadan. That just weeks after terrorists drove into pedestrians walking across London Bridge, and in New York City's Times Square, a drunk driver slammed into pedestrians who were in the wrong place at the wrong time. It seems the simple act of walking on the sidewalk has become more dangerous than ever. Former British Army officer Chris Bird says everyone needs to be aware of their surroundings at all times, but not to succumb to fear. Bird is the author of Surviving a Mass Killer Rampage. He joins us on the line from San Antonio. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Peter. Pleasure to be with you.
Nice to have you on the program. That line that we have to be aware of our surroundings at all times, but not succumb to fear, that's a thin line to walk across. How do you find the balance?
I guess you don't want to become paranoid where everything is a threat. But on the other hand, you do want to take certain precautions. One of the things that I find most distressing is the number of people you see walking along the street or driving who have their face in a cell phone. They're texting, they're talking, they're paying absolutely no attention to what's going on around them. And this is dangerous. 99 times out of 100, there'll be no problem. But I know my wife even tends to answer the phone compulsively, even when she's driving. And when I'm in her car, I can tell the difference. She'll miss a turning. She'll maybe change lanes without looking. I kind of cringe a little, but I guess I've got used to it. She's pretty good. But it's things like that that we have to be aware of. There are also certain precautions as far as these vehicles are concerned. It seems that the bigger the vehicle, the more damage, the more casualties there are. And I noticed it was interesting that a couple of these things in Britain happened on bridges where there is nowhere to go. If you're walking down a street, always try and face the traffic, so you have a little bit more warning if somebody is coming driving a vehicle onto the sidewalk. You can see it before it actually happens or while it's happening. Another thing is if you're walking down the street, if you happen to see that there is parking on one side but not on the other, and a string of cars parked will prevent another vehicle from getting onto the sidewalk. So you're safer on the sidewalk that has cars parked alongside it.
I think part of the situation, too, is, thankfully, knock on wood, we live in a country, we live on a continent that, for the most part, has been relatively terrorist-free. I bring up that point only because I remember back in the day, back when I first started in radio, I was working in a newsroom, and it was in the 80s, and I remember something coming over the wire. It was a story about a crowded mall in Israel where a gunman had opened fire and had killed only 14 people. And I say only 14 people because it immediately struck me that if that had been a similar situation in Canada or the United States where it was a crowded mall, the first inclination when somebody hears any kind of a noise, a shot of some kind, is to stop, look around and see where it's coming from, as opposed to running or dropping or whatever, thereby making more people suspected targets because people were inattentive to what it could possibly be. Is that an accurate assessment?
I think so. It's difficult to be absolutely sure, particularly in a building, in a mall or an airport or something, exactly where a shot's coming from. And before you start running, you really ought to find out which way to run. And the mantra that is now being put forth by the U.S. Homeland Security and Justice Department, the New York City Police, is if you're involved in a mass shooting, you have three options: run, hide, fight. And I found it interesting that the woman, Kathy Lanier, who was the chief of the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, said, "We have told our citizens for decades, don't fight back. Call 911, get out of there, but don't fight back." And now we're telling them fight is one of the options. It's unfortunate that she was actually responsible for issuing concealed carry permits in Washington, and she had turned down 80 of them. So I think to some extent her hypocritical slip was showing. But in Canada, you don't generally have concealed carry. I think this does give you another option, and it certainly makes, if you have to fight, you've got a better weapon than almost anything else if you have a firearm, and it'll usually be a handgun. But even if you don't, there are things that you can do that will help keep you safe. And I think most important is what we call situational awareness. You have to, the first thing is to be aware of what's going on. If you see something suspicious, depending on what it is, you can report it. This is probably a good thing to report to the police. But if you see, for example, in an airport, somebody putting a bag down and leaving it, I would tend to get as far away from that container as possible.
Okay, well, before just going on that note, you would get as far away from it as possible. Would you also alert someone, like you just said? Would you say to someone, "I just saw someone drop that bag there and leave it there," rather than just simply walking away? Would you also inform someone?
Oh yeah, absolutely. But my first, your first responsibility, and this is where I think some people tend to get it a little skewed. Your first responsibility is your own safety. Even if we're talking family members, because you can't help them if you're dead. So priority number one is to stay alive and stay whole as much as possible. Then you can think about helping other people. Although you tend to want to, if there is a bomb explosion or a shooting and there are victims lying all over the place wounded, be very careful before you rush in, even if you're qualified as a paramedic or a doctor or anything like that, be careful about going in there, because very often one of the things that they use is they'll set off a bomb in one place, wait for first responders to start gathering, and then another bomb will go off and slaughter them. So that's another thing that you have to be a little wary of.
You're the author of Surviving a Mass Killer Rampage. We have had several situations over the last few years in several locations dealing with attempted mass killers or actual mass killers. At what point did you say, I need to write this book and I need to inform people?
Well, the first book I wrote was called The Concealed Handgun Manual. And in its sixth edition, the first chapter was about mass shootings. And when this became more common, I thought, well, this is probably worth a whole book on its own. The subtitle is also indicative of one of the problems, and that is when seconds count, police are still minutes away. You have to rely on yourself to survive. Waiting for the police to come and rescue you or take care of the bad guy is not a good recipe for survival.
Do you find that our somewhat lackadaisical approach, and as you said earlier in the conversation, the idea that people are now walking around with their faces buried in iPhones and not even looking at their surroundings, do you find that we're reaching a point where we're more vulnerable now than we were, say, 5, 10, 15 years ago?
I think that may be true. It's probably a little bit speculative. I certainly don't have any statistics to back that up, but I do get the impression that that particularly cell phones they're an advantage, but they're also a disadvantage. And a lot of people who, particularly people who depend on the cell phone for their living, on always being in contact, they cannot hear the cell phone go off without answering it. And I think this is often a mistake. I won't drive and talk on a cell phone. I know that a lot of people do, but it means that you're trying to multitask, and I'm old enough and honest enough, I guess, to realize that my multitasking isn't that great.
The book is called Surviving a Mass Killer Rampage. It's written by Chris Berg. Chris, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. It's been most valuable information that you've been sharing.
Well, thank you, Peter. I enjoyed it.
Chris Berg, author of Surviving a Mass Killer Rampage. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0412, and you'll find links to Chris's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. If there's one warning label virtually everyone has seen, it would probably be the one found on pillows. There's a lot of confusion about those pillow tags. Can we remove them or not? However, if you actually make a pillow, they're not only confusing, they're expensive. Carrie Smith was expecting her first child when she developed a unique pillow that made her more comfortable. Other pregnant women loved it too, so she decided to sell them. Then she discovered that 15 states have special regulations just about pillow tags. She said that all the red tape was the toughest part of starting her business. Let's be fair, selling a pillow isn't easy in America. One of the winners in our wacky warning label contest a few years ago was found on a travel pillow made specifically for children. It's a great product, but it actually came with a warning saying, keep product away from children. With all of these regulations to think about, it's no wonder so many of us have a hard time sleeping at night. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nallman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And joining us once again, the original Boss Baby, Stuart Nullman.
I was going to say the original Jack Ryan too, but I guess no one would believe me on that one.
No.
You know what? I was in Poland a couple of months ago.
Yep.
And actually, when I was in Krakow, I saw a poster for the Polish version of Boss Baby.
Okay.
I tried to read the interpretation of Boss Baby in Polish. Couldn't do it.
Okay.
I tried. Couldn't do it. And I said, Alec Baldwin speaks Polish? Wow. He is talented.
Talented. Multi-talented.
Yes, he is. And speaking of Alec Baldwin, yes, on this edition of Book Banter, we're going to look at Alec Baldwin. Because you may know him as the CIA agent Jack Ryan, the original, the lead prosecutor during the Nuremberg War Crimes Trials, and an excellent TV movie about it called Nuremberg. Or as TV network executive Jack Donaghy, or even as President Donald J. Trump on Saturday Night Live. But the one role that Alec Baldwin has portrayed throughout his more than 30 years on the stage, movies, and TVs, not to mention his off-screen controversies that grabbed a great deal of tabloid headlines, that many members of the general public are not aware of, is of the real Alec Baldwin himself and the rough road he had to travel to get where he is today, which is told in great detail and fascinating stories in his eye-opening memoir called Nevertheless. Now, if it was Baldwin's mission to elicit from the reader feelings of elation, sadness, sympathy, and empathy from this memoir, he accomplished it with flying colors. This is especially so with the earlier section of the book, when he recounts his life growing up on the wrong side of the tracks in Massapequa, New York. There's plenty of sadness, disappointment, and tragedy within these pages, especially when he recounts how his father, who was a much-respected high school teacher for 28 years, worked hard at his job, not to mention taking on many other extracurricular responsibilities, yet he received no career nor monetary advancement for his efforts. And look, he only had to support a wife, he had to support six kids too. Then there's this paternal grandfather who lived in Brooklyn, who was a respected assistant district attorney, yet he was disbarred after he was implicated in a bribery scandal. So this is just the tip of the iceberg for Baldwin's upbringing in Massapequa. Yet through all of his formative years, filled with such personal and family setbacks, Baldwin always managed to be resourceful and survive such instances that would break any mortal human being.
But when you think about it, though, are his setbacks really his setbacks? I mean, really?
Well, it also could be his siblings' setbacks, too. I mean,
it's just that I know a little bit about Alec Baldwin's life as well, and I have not read the book yet like you have, but there are a lot of people with far more tragic lives than Alec Baldwin.
Maybe. You're right about that. But
I mean all he seems to describe when he's talked about his life is the fact that he's had a lower middle class life, which a lot of us had.
But not many of us, get to write it down and get it published in the book. And also, come on, he's a popular actor, and sometimes troubled, but he got that opportunity.
And so did his brothers.
Yeah, so did his brothers.
Yep.
But if you're looking for a story dealing with the Baldwin's career in show business, and there's quite a lot of them, then Nevertheless will not disappoint. From Baldwin's first big break in the Broadway production of Prelude to a Kiss, to his back-and-forth battle with Paramount Pictures to repeat his Jack Ryan role in the next Tom Clancy political thriller, which he believes the studio led him on yet never intended to re-sign him to the role. It went to Harrison Ford, obviously. The rather toxic marriage to Kim Basinger, how he almost destroyed his movie career by accepting a part on the Neil Simon rom-com The Marrying Man, to his success as a repeat Saturday Night Live host, which he attributes to not portraying screen characters that basically the SNL cast could easily imitate and left him open to do original characters that the show's writers created. There are plenty of behind-the-scenes entertainment industry stories that he shares in his book, and the readers can enjoy quite a lot of them, actually. He's not too shy to share those. But, when I found out that, basically, nevertheless, I found it kind of riveting and honest, too, and somewhat therapeutic, maybe, for Baldwin. It's a book that of one man overcoming a great deal of personal and professional ups and downs to become a true show business renaissance man and survivor, and he has all the scars to prove it.
Mm-hmm. And the book again is?
Called Nevertheless by Alec Baldwin. It's published by Harper, and it's $35.99.
And in a similar vein, sir, what do you recommend?
Well, I mean, there's no one of the same cloth cut from Alec Baldwin, but I found a couple of interesting bios, memoirs of two Hollywood leading actors.
You mean Billy Baldwin doesn't have a book?
No, but don't
Stephen give me Baldwin any... doesn't have a book?
No, not even
Daniel Baldwin doesn't have a book?
No, not even Stanley Baldwin. Oh, wait a minute. He was a former Prime Minister of Great Britain. Sorry.
Okay.
But one I read many years ago. It's called Montgomery Clift by Patricia Bosworth. It was published in 1978. And it's an excellent account about the troubled actor who was a superstar in the late 40s and early 50s. And how he was just – this just smells – I mean, besides a very talented actor, was if you want a true tragic figure, you know, Bosworth really brings it out, especially – his car accident in 1956, which nearly killed him and just basically sent him to a path to destruction for the last 10 years of his life following that accident. It's one of the best Hollywood actor biographies that I've read in a very long time.
One of his childhood friends from his Broadway days?
Oh,
Dick Van Patten.
Oh, it's right.
Dick Van Patten. They were close friends.
Late 30s.
Yep.
And also one book that you've always touted, Peter, that you've always touted.
Yep.
And you say it was one of the best showbiz memoirs that you've ever read. And I have to say it, and I have to mention it. It's Kirk Douglas's The Ragman's Son.
It is the best biography, autobiography I've ever read. The best when it comes to a Hollywood autobiography, Kirk Douglas's.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And it's a riveting book. And, you know, when I got it when it came out in paperback, and I couldn't put it down. And if you want honest and, you know, come from rags to riches kind of story, yeah, you got it here with Kirk Douglas's book, The Ragman's Son.
I really can't share the story on the air, but I think you'll know what I'm talking about when I refer to the story about when he was having sex with an anti-Semitic.
Oh, yes. You're right.
That is a priceless page, to say the least. Worth every page in the book, but that one is priceless.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't know if he used a ghostwriter or anything.
He did not.
So,
and yeah. He's written many books since then. I've read, I think, 3 of his 4 books. They're all very, very good.
Yeah, no, he's quite a writer. And hey, look, he has another book that just came out that he published in conjunction with TCM, Turner Classic Movies. A collection of letters that he wrote with his wife of more than 60 years, and how this was a true Hollywood marriage made in heaven.
Could you imagine being married to somebody for 60 years, and that's your second wife?
Yeah.
that's astounding.
Yeah,
anyway,
for Hollywood standards, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, this week's book is, once again?
It's called Nevertheless by Alec Baldwin, published by Harper, and it's $35.99.
And how can people find you, sir?
Well, they won't find me with the Baldwin family, that's for sure. They're going to find me in the pages of the Montreal Times every Saturday or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
And you're welcome, Peter. And if you excuse me, I have to audition for the next Tom Clancy thriller. I could be the next Jack Ryan.
No. No.
I'll give it a shot.
No. No. Stuart Nolman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're into the home stretch here on this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, but I got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, Japan's Samurai Age store, which naturally offers novelty samurai apparel, is featuring a new line of samurai armor outfits for cats and dogs. The body armor is sized for small pets, but custom orders for larger sizes are possible and can include a helmet and mask. Samurai enthusiasts can also order armor for liquor bottles and dolls. Wow, some people really do have way too much time on their hands. They also have more dollars than cents. You know, we occasionally share stories on this program with the header of undignified deaths. We haven't had one for a while, but this one certainly fits the bill. Robert Dreher, celebrating his 89th birthday, suffered no apparent injury when he crashed his car into a fire hydrant in Vieira, Florida in May. but as he got out of the car to check the damage, he drowned after being sucked into the hole by the strong water pressure where the hydrant had been. A bystander tried to rescue Dreyer, but couldn't overcome the water pressure to reach him. Well, if you're one of those who follows the teachings of the Bible closely, this is a classic case of when it's your time to go. It really is your time to go. And police in Britain say a thief who robbed a 91-year-old woman of her jewelry and then used her wedding ring to make a marriage proposal has been jailed. West Midlands police say 38-year-old Stephen Reed and an accomplice broke into the woman's home. Police say Reed used a gold wedding ring to propose to a woman several days later. That woman later recognized the ring in a police appeal for the return of stolen jewelry and contacted police. Reed received a 4-year, 9-month sentence at Birmingham Crown Court for burglary. Accomplice Jerome Jones received a slightly shorter sentence. Police did not say if the wedding proposal had been accepted. I'm going out on a limb and say no. I'm also assuming she ain't waiting for him when he gets out, either. You know, we have a whole new set of items in the section of this program we like to call Armed and Clumsy. Yes, still more incidents in which people accidentally shoot themselves. We start off with a 46-year-old staff member of the National Rifle Association training on a firing range. That took place in Fairfax County, Virginia in April. A fleeing robber run over by his victim, with the collision causing the robber's gun to fire into his own mouth. Ouch. That's in Hawthorne, California in March. Two boys aged 17 and 19 practicing, and I'm doing air quotes here, practicing loading and unloading a handgun managed to hit each other. That was in Houston in March. A homeless 45-year-old man in a now classic waistband holster crotch malfunction. That's in Lake Panasoffee in Florida in October. A U.S. Park police officer shot his foot in a confrontation with a raccoon. No word on how the raccoon fared. That was in Washington, D.C. in November. And a 48-year-old man shot himself, then apparently angry at how it happened, shot his bed in Ocean County, Michigan in July. Consider these all part of what we also like to call the Darwin Starter Kit. Anyway, it's near the end of the program, folks. We have one more story, and you know what that is, boys and girls. Yes, it's time once again for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This stuff off presents the Idiot of the Day.
A woman is facing charges after police say she left her 5-year-old child in a car in 107-degree heat for 30 minutes to go shopping. Police were called to the Dollar General in South Daytona, Florida, for a report of a child left in a vehicle. They found the 5-year-old sitting in a locked Hyundai alone with the front driver's side window rolled down and the driver's rear side window rolled down slightly. The car was directly in the sunlight without any shade. Responding officers reported the child appeared upset and was sweating. When the child's mother, identified as 30-year-old Colleen Walker, walked out of the store, she spoke to police and firefighters. She told emergency crews that her child was only in the car for 12 minutes and that her son wanted to stay in the car. Surveillance video from the store reportedly showed the child in the car for about 30 minutes. Responding emergency crews checked out the boy and he was okay. You know, sadly, we hear stories like this all the time, and they don't always turn out with a child being okay. So what makes this mother this week's award winner? Well, when Colleen was arrested, she reportedly told them that it was too hot in the back of the cruiser and to turn the air conditioning up as she was being driven to jail. Walker was arrested on charges of child neglect and could face up to 5 years in prison. Now, why? Oh, why? As an adult in a moving air-conditioned vehicle, would you complain about it being too hot in the car, yet not understand why a 5-year-old shouldn't be left unattended for a half hour in a parked vehicle in 107-degree heat? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0412. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and that once again is 0412. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on Patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.